Chapter 29. At the office, Sarah phoned Bachman's. No one answered. Leisha had probably arranged for the body to be shipped to Newton for burial. Sarah left work at 4 o'clock, overnight kit bungeed to the back of the bike and crammed into her tank bag, and headed toward the village. Yellow police tape still sealed the entrance to Bachman's shop, but the place was no longer guarded. Sarah had requisitioned the key from evidence. Pulling onto the curb, she tucked the bike in close to the building, removed her helmet and locked it to the frame. She locked her bike, went up the steps, and unlocked the front gate. A different key unlocked the hand-carved double doors. The place smelled faintly of antiseptic and dried blood. Sarah switched on the lights in the shop and stood in the doorway for a minute. The place seemed to have been left untouched since the technicians left, the antiques all still in place. At some point, someone would have to take inventory, if only for dispersal of the estate. The phone was behind the counter, next to where the killer had planted Bachman's head. It was a Radio Shack voice recorder. The lab had already analyzed the tape. Nothing helpful. Sarah pushed the announce button. "Greetings," said a dry voice with a touch of Europe. "You have reached Thaddeus Bachman, specializing in Oriental antiquities. I regret no one is present to take your call right now, but if you leave a message, someone will get back to you. Our office hours are from 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., Monday through Friday, special hours by appointment. Thank you." She turned the phone over and, using a tiny screwdriver attached to her keychain, unscrewed the base. She examined the phone closely but found nothing resembling a bug. Next, she traced the line back to the wall, went out into the hall to the elevator. Bound to be a transfer box in the basement. If a crook had access, he could put the bug there. The elevator opened at her touch. She stepped into the tiny booth, pushed the button for the basement, and waited for the nictitating door to close. The elevator descended groaning, like an old janitor complaining about his arthritis. The basement was surprisingly well lit with fluorescent fixtures, and consisted of row after row of storage lockers jammed with cardboard boxes, rolled rugs, coddled paintings, a lifetime of collecting. Sarah found the exchange box. There was only one line into the house, with a phone on each floor. There was no bug. Sarah went to the second floor, which housed a library and what appeared to be a guest room, where Leisha had spent the night. The soap in the guest bath was still damp. Sarah went through the whole house but could find no evidence of a bug. She looked behind the pictures. She looked beneath the tables, chairs, and desks. Nada. Finally, conceding defeat, she called it quits. She briefly debated showering there, instead of at David's, across the street, but decided against it out of respect. Going methodically through the house, making sure she left everything as she found it, she let herself out the front door, locked it, closed the gate and locked that. She turned and gazed across the street, at the little sword polisher sign beneath the Feldstein Gallery. She looked up. A tailor advertised in the second floor windows. The third floor appeared to be residential, blinds open, except for one window, open perhaps one third, on a darkened room. You could bug someone without even entering the house by shining a laser on a window. The window acts as a speaker membrane, much like the eardrum, vibrating with whatever sound is produced inside. The bounced laser beam comes back, faithfully recording every sound. Apprehension mixed with excitement, Sarah crossed the street. Instead of going down into the tiny alcove that serviced Copkind, she went up the broad granite stair to the arched Roman entrance, into the elegant little foyer, the door to the Feldstein Gallery open, garrulous customers inside. Behind a glass, the building's occupants were listed in white plastic letters. Copkind. Feldstein. Art the tailor. Grossman the accountant. The third floor contained two private apartments, Bloomberg and Anderson. The building was managed by the Chalmers Group, Scott Chalmers Management Company. Head swirling, Sarah stepped out into the late afternoon sunshine. She was certain that the apartment with the slightly open window was vacant, except for a laser listening device. She didn't believe in coincidence. Chalmers had been gaga for swords. Perhaps he had been Hotchkiss mystery buyer. But why the subterfuge? She glanced at her watch. Whoops. She was actually 15 minutes late for her date with David. She'd warned him she was coming over early to shower and get ready. She descended to the basement shop and entered through the tinkling door. Yoshi appeared, followed a moment later by a smiling David, slightly disheveled. Hi. Make yourself at home. What? What? You look like you're either on the verge of a great discovery, or you've lost your mind. The former, I hope. I'll tell you about it. Good. Because I have a story for you too. Take your time. I've got 300 strokes to go. David, can I stash my bike in your workroom? Sure. I'll go open the door. She went outside, brought the bike around, threaded through the gate and door and parked it in a corner of his workroom. She looked for the sword on which he was working, but couldn't see it. Unclipping her leather overnighter, she disappeared into the bathroom. Sarah showered, toweled off and started in on her hair. The hair. There was so much of it, drying had become an ordeal. First, she had to haul along her own hairdryer, never sure if her destination had one, or if it would be up to the job. Second, drying took time, and often left frizzed ends. Sometimes she really resented how much extra work went into being a girl. It wasn't just the hair, it was the fashions designed for visual appeal not comfort, the makeup, the nails, the endless shaving and plucking. Occasionally she found herself envying her male co-workers, many of whom obviously put no effort whatsoever into maintaining their personal appearances. She'd thought about cutting the hair short thousands of times. Go for a nice bob. She wasn't a teenager anymore, and sometimes, in a scuffle, long hair could become a liability. She kept it pinned up at work. But tonight, she wanted all her hair. They were going to a jazz club, not a party, so she'd brought a pair of low-rise 7 jeans and matching jacket, and wore a luscious jade-colored silk top, cut low, sure to stun. Finally, the makeup, a minimalist operation, thank her lucky stars. A touch of blush, a flash of CoverGirl Go Glam, Gem, a smear of Neutrogena, hey, presto. She was transformed from gorgeous to spectacular. The Armani Ella was last to go on, in certain strategic spots. She turned off the fan and opened the door. In here, David called from the living room. She entered. Copkind, who'd been standing at his entertainment console loading CDs, took one look, slapped his forehead, and leaped off his feet like Dagwood Bumstead confronted with a conundrum. He landed on his back in a perfect judo roll, slapping the carpet, but maintaining his cartoon characterization. Woo woo, he barked, like the wolf in a Betty Boop cartoon. Sarah was pleased, couldn't help blushing. Okay, come on, get up. You've seen me all dolled up before. Copkind got to his feet, a goofy grin on his face. He wore khakis and an olive green coarse weave cotton shirt, neatly tucked and held in place with a leather belt. I thought we'd have a glass of wine before heading over. It's only a couple blocks away, if you don't mind walking. I love to walk. David pushed a button and Charlie Hayden's Quartet West began to cast its film noir spell through the speakers. He opened a lacquered cabinet and poured two glasses of Pinot Noir. Sarah sat on a fold-up futon sofa. One wall was covered floor-to-ceiling with oak shelves, supported by designer cinder blocks. The shelves were crammed with books, DVDs, CDs, and the entertainment system, a large screen TV with all the perks, cable, DVR, DVD, and a sound system. One wall was exposed brick, decorated with several paintings and a Japanese woodcut of a priest traveling toward Mount Fuji. The hardwood floor was mostly covered with a thick, Southwest Indian-style rug. Aside from the futon sofa, there was a leather chair and a series of cushions, a low, freestyle walnut coffee table, and in the corner, what appeared to be a Shinto shrine. Copkind handed her a drink, toasted. Cheers. They sipped. David, do you know your upstairs neighbors? Who, Feldstein? Sure. No, I mean those two private apartments on the third floor. Do you rent from the Chalmers management group? Yeah. You know, Chalmers was the samurai killer's second victim. The polisher's face twisted in consternation. That Chalmers? I had no idea. What about Bloomberg and Anderson? Those are the two names on the mailboxes for the third floor. Do you know them? No, I've never met either one. I've been here for 2 years too. It's funny. Do you think it's possible there's no one in those apartments? At least one of them? Where are we going with this? I want to take a look at that one apartment with the open window facing Bachman's shop. I'm wondering how did the killer know Bachman had what he wanted? One answer is, he may have bugged the shop. And one way you can bug a place without actually going inside is to bounce a laser beam off the windows. Copkind frowned, impressed. Geez. I don't know. I suppose we could go up there and knock on the door. Sarah smiled and set her glass down. Let's.